It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in a few moments, our guest says transparent government is vital to a thriving democracy, and citizens need to work to make it happen.
First, do we live in the best state in the country? Well, Gallup released a new survey asking citizens whether they think their state is the best or the worst to live in.
And so some states out west came in toward the top of the poll. Montana, number one. Alaska, number two. We had Rhode Island and Illinois at the bottom. Where's Wisconsin, of course, is what we're wondering. We are number 21, Veronica, right in the middle.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah. So 49% of us.
Get it?
The pack.
Huh?
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
49% said we're the best or one of the best states to live in. This is Wisconsinites talking. 8% said the best. 2% said it's the worst. Now, here's the thing, though. Most of the data was collected before the winter.
Oh, see?
Do you think that changed anybody's mind?
Are you kidding me? Were you here this winter?
They're gone. I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here, too. So maybe not.
So we want to hear what you think about this. You can go over to the Central Time Facebook page and share your thoughts on why Wisconsin is the best or the worst state to live in. Well, coming up, National Prescription Take-Back Day is tomorrow. We'll look at local and statewide efforts to safely and easily dispose of our expired prescription drugs.
First, politicians often applaud the idea of transparent government, but do they put it into practice? And how can we measure government transparency? Our next guest says the answers to those questions are vital to the future of representative government.
Donald Gordon joins us now. He's a longtime community activist. He teaches political history and civic engagement at Northwestern University. His new book is Transparent Government, What It Means and How You Can Make It Happen. Don, welcome to the show.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, a lot of people might hear government transparency and think, that sounds nice. Yeah, we need that. But it's not something that maybe fires people up. Why should citizens be worried about government transparency?
Well, to address the first point you just made, which is it doesn't necessarily fire them up, the problem we have to start out with is really coming to an agreement on a definition of transparency in government. And a lot of what we get is just simple disclosure, which can be really boring and really doesn't get people, active and engaged, because it's just, a bunch of facts thrown out there that's very hard sometimes to sort through. One of the things I use in my course as an example is I take them on to the Illinois Board of Elections site, where there's a great deal of disclosure that's mandated in the state of Illinois. But when you start sorting through the Board of Elections site and all the information that's out there, it's really hard to bring about any meaning to it, much less to get people excited about it. So the first thing we have to do is, in the first chapter of the book, addresses the point of coming to an agreement on what we really mean by transparency in government. And
pursue that point. It's not just a data dump. But what are you looking for in government transparency?
Well, one of the things I try to simplify, too, is that I draw an analogy to a house being built. And I try to make the distinction so that it's clear in the first chapter between disclosure and transparency. In disclosure, you're basically got the foundation to the house, but you don't have a house. You can't live in the foundation. You can't enjoy it. It certainly doesn't get you excited looking at a foundation. And transparency is the house that's built upon that foundation. So, when you look at it that way, disclosure is to transparency as the foundation is to a house. And to bring a little bit more into that, is what we have to do, and I've used an acronym primarily to get my students to remember it, but certainly for citizens as well, I've used an acronym that that goes like this. You have to ace disclosure in order to get to transparency. And what that means is you have to make the information that you're disclosing accessible, so it's got to be easy to get to. You've got to make it comprehensible, so when you're looking at it, the average person can understand it. You don't need a degree in political science to understand what you're looking at. And the last thing is, and what we seem to miss, is that it needs to be enticing. In other words, the information needs to grab you. At least some of it. Everything that's out there isn't going to grab you. You're not going to get excited about everything that goes on in government. But everybody has their hot button, And when you go and look at this information, if it's truly transparent, it's going to get you excited. It's going to, in a lot of cases, it's going to cause what I call civic enragement. But in the end, it leads to civic engagement. And if transparency, if the information that's put out there doesn't lead to civic engagement, you really don't have a successful implementation of transparency in government.
Well, if I'm working in a government office and you're telling me, hey, I want you to make information accessible, comprehensive, and exciting for people to get to, that's going to really make them mad about what I'm doing, how do we get somebody in that government office to do those things?
One of the things I mentioned in the books, I go through some of the hurdles, the government hurdles, the citizen hurdles in getting to transparency in government. And the biggest hurdle in government to establishing true transparency is the culture in government. We are still, for the most part, there's very few areas of government where, other than maybe in Washington, where we've got a directive from the president back in 2008 to establish more transparency and define it. But for the most part, the culture in government is still a 20th century culture. The culture is still wrapped around the foundation of the FOIA process, Freedom of Information Act process, being the driver for delivering information. And, you know, FOIA laws were started federally back in the late 60s and then implemented by all 50 states. At a time when communication was far less than what we have today. If you wanted some information, if you wanted to file a FOIA, you basically went down to a government office, they made a bunch of copies or they gave you microfiche, and that's how you got your information. Today, you can sit at your laptop, even your phone, and just click a button, and you can get access to information. That culture to be able to implement that kind of transparency still doesn't exist in most government agencies. Most government agencies are still in what I call that FOIA era, where it's based on you having to deliver, in effect, a note from mother in order to say, hey, I should get that information. And it also brings up another issue, which is we are our government. It's sort of a Zen thing, right? I mean, we're controlled by our government to some extent, but we also are our government. And all that information that's out there that government has is our information. You shouldn't need a note from mother to ask for that information. Now, there are cases when, obviously, you don't want to disclose, government shouldn't be disclosing information for a variety of reasons. They can make a case for it. There might be an ongoing investigation, and you don't want to release information yet. There may be a security issue, nationally or even on a state basis, where you don't want to release it. But at some point, that information should be released. And we really haven't, as a society, come to grips with the fact that that information truly is indeed ours. And really what we need to do is, at this stage of the game now in the 21st century, is turn FOIA on its head and, in effect, make a case for why information shouldn't be released and otherwise the information should be made available.
I want to get into what kind of information you're envisioning government making accessible, comprehensible, and enticing and having out there for us to access.
When you take a look at, and get back to the definition that came to in the book, but what we're looking at is not just the facts and the figures, which is often what you see, but also the mechanisms and processes behind that. So in other words, when you see data that's out there, there are times when you're looking at that and you want to know, well, how did you come about in arriving at this? A budget, a municipal budget, is a really good example of that. The best you get today in a lot of cases, and like we have here in Chicago, is you get the 200-page PDF document of the budget. And, you know, God help you if you can get through that and figure out what's where in that budget. But even given that you can get through that, those are simply the facts and figures. You know, what were the processes that came about in arriving at that? And you might hone in on, let's say, maybe garbage pickup. And we just recently went to a grid system in Chicago. and you take a look at a municipal budget, you take a look at what it's costing to pick up garbage, and you want to look at the information behind it. That may be your thing. You, for whatever reason, that may be your hot button. You know, I'm really tired of how garbage is getting picked up. I think it's a waste of money. I spend too much of my taxes on it. That may be your thing. You should be able to go behind the facts and the figures that you might see in a budget, for instance, and say, how did you come to these decisions that, for instance, that we should be on a grid system? Maybe that's not the right idea. Those processes, the mechanisms in arriving at how government is done, also needs to be available. Not necessarily because everybody's going to be looking at it, but because some people will, and that should be available to them.
We're talking to Don Gordon about his new book, Transparent Government, What It Means and How You Can Make It Happen. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with Donald Gordon, author of Transparent Government, What It Means and How You Can Make It Happen.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What would you like to know about what your local, state, or national government is doing? How would you like to be able to access that information? Our guest is saying, hey, we need to flip things around instead of us having to ask for something and make our case for it. The government should have to make a case for what not to reveal. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Don, you quote an interview, an extensive interview with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, making the case that sometimes government officials need non-transparency. They need to be able to have an open and honest behind-the-scenes conversation without worrying how, you know, the public's going to spin what they're saying in that closed-door sure. session. What do you say to that idea?
He made a point which I think could be valid to some extent, and you can even carry that over into, you know, the private sector. You know, you have to at least be able to have conversations with people and not expect that there's going to be a microphone next to you and all of it's being broadcast real-time. So I don't have an issue with his response in that interview that he needs to be able to carry on a conversation. The point, however, is that at some point of time, that information should be accessible. So he needs to make a decision. He needs to have time to work with his staff in private to be able to come up with solutions. Sometimes there's contractual obligations with vendors that they have to deal with. So they need some time to be able to do this outside of the public eye. But that information on how that process worked, and whether it be his emails go around through the office or the minutes of those meetings, at some point that stuff needs to be released. And the reason I'm saying that as well is because one of the key factors in why people are just get fed up with government and just become apathetic is that they see their government as a black box, and that stuff goes on behind closed doors. They have no idea, you know, why things are happening the way they're happening, and they're frustrated with the fact that they're never going to find out, that these things are going to happen despite them. And this is what one of the key factors of what stymies civic engagement. If we want to drive people to become civically engaged, we have to inform them. If that information, done properly, can empower people, it can motivate them to become involved. You know, Dewey once said that voting is simply a culmination. It's a culmination of people being involved prior to going out to vote. You don't wake up one morning and say, "Oh, it's a beautiful day. I think I'll go out and vote today." You go out and vote because you've been driven to vote. You've had motivation to do that because you've become involved, whether it's with, you know, maybe in a campaign or with a particular candidate or on an issue, and it gets you out to vote. If we want to increase voter turnout in this country, and God knows we need to do that, then we need to do the hard work of getting people engaged in their day-to-day activities in their neighborhoods and in their cities. And to do that, they've got to get information. We as citizens have to have the information, or it's going to be very difficult to be able to motivate people to become engaged.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Graydon with us in Milwaukee. Graydon, hi.
Hi. One of the major concerns that always comes up for me whenever I talk about transparency is how money moves around during elections. So if And I see it as a concern because we keep on relaxing our regulation for how, you know, money is donated to our political candidates. And I want to be able to have that information provided for me so that I know if a politician gets donations from a super PAC or something, and then he makes policy decisions or puts money into the hands of certain government contractors or whoever, I think that's information I need to know.
Graydon, thanks a lot. So a couple things there, the campaign finance, but let's start with this second point, being able to track where government money goes when it's spent on private contractors.
Yeah, there's the campaign finance issues actually was being addressed going back a while now. And a lot of that information is out there. Some of it just is simple disclosure, as I said before, which is hard to navigate through. But there are sites that are out there now, sites like OpenSecrets.org, where they've taken that information and reformatted it in a way to make it comprehensible so that you actually can and plug in your, you know, your congressional rep, and you can see, you know, who's contributing to your congressional rep and the industries that are contributing to your congressional rep. So that path that we're going down is really starting to open up it more in federal elections, though not necessarily in state elections. And that's really where we need to have that kind of transparency, is in state local elections, because there's over 500,000 elected offices in this country. And of that, less than 1,000 sit in D.C. and in state offices. All the rest are local campaigns. So it would really help if we had that information in a comprehensible form, going all the way down to the local elections. As far as the second part of this, I mean, when we talk about campaign finance and money in politics, we're really getting even beyond the issue of just simple transparency. I mean, we're really starting to deal with the issue of, how do we develop our system, our political system, to mitigate the need for money to run for office, and that's a whole other book.
Let's go to another caller. We've got Karen with us in Prairie du Chien. Karen, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. One is, you brought up the fact that the government works for the citizens. And it makes me wonder, in that case, why there even are closed-door sessions. Yes, we can rely on the minutes, but can we trust them? Even if it's a contractual thing, hiring someone to fix a school parking lot, we should have input in it.
All right.
My second point is, a lot of the financial information is out there, but it's so subject to spin.
All right, Karen, thanks a lot for bringing those up. Backing up a lot of what you have said, Don, just a little bit of time left now. Do you see governments moving in the right direction, local, state, or federal government, on transparency?
I absolutely do, and I think that's why it's important that we come to some agreement in defining what it is transparency is about, because every campaign in this country and every politician who runs for office is dropping the word transparency when they run. And, you can have 1,000 different ways of looking at this. We really have to come to some agreement on this. And it really is just a lot more than just simple disclosure. And that really needs to happen. Now, the second part of this is that I'm from the boomer generation. I have a lot of confidence in the next generation coming through, our kids, the millennials in particular, which is actually a larger generation than us, well over 80 million. And I have confidence in them that as they become, and they are now becoming candidates, running for office, working for government, that their expectations and their culture will change how we do government and will make government much more open. And I'm very optimistic about that. And maybe that's because I see that every day with students. But I also see it in my community, and from community organizing, I, I see that in the younger people in the community, and this attitude that, you know what, we want our government open. We want to know what's going on. You know, I talk in the book a lot about...
Actually, Don, I think that'll be a good place to leave it. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. It was good talking to you.
That was community organizer Donald Gordon. He's author of the new book, Transparent Government.
Coming up, tomorrow is National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. We'll find out how it works and why it's important for people to dispose of prescription drugs safely. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.